Hello, welcome back to season two of the Smart Life podcast. Thank you so much to everybody that's been listening along and sending us feedback. We love hearing from you. So if you've got any thoughts, feedback, or questions about the episode today, make sure you find us on social media, Beacon Agency, or drop us an email, hello@beaconagency.co.uk. We've got a fantastic episode talking about smart home and the aging population. So without further ado, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the second series of the Smart Life podcast, exploring the latest in smart home technology and IoT.
This podcast is created in conjunction with the Smart Homes and Buildings Association and produced by Beacon Agency.
I'm Jess Hadley.
And I'm Thomas Joy. And in today's episode, we're going to be exploring how we can use technology to help improve the lives of the elderly.
Here to talk to us today is Natalie Wolfen, Product Marketing Manager from Schneider Electric. Schneider Electric believes that access to energy and digital is a basic human right. Their mission is to empower everyone to make the most of their energy and resources by providing energy and automation digital solutions for efficiency and sustainability. Natalie has a particular passion in exploring the benefits of new technology can bring to the aging population and has presented her findings at an SH and BA events in the past. Welcome to the podcast, Natalie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So the government has tasked itself to help elderly people to live in their homes 5 years. How do you think smart technology can help them achieve that?
Okay, so I think it's kind of important to state initially why this is important. Mm. So the stats show us that by 2030, one in five people in the UK will be aged 65 or over. And actually, of those, the fastest growing age group is 85 plus. So there's a huge kind of shift in the demographic, and we definitely have an aging population. Try to think of this question in almost in three themes of what I think would have the sort of the most impact on how we can help people to age in place. So I've got comfort and convenience, and security. Communication. So if I look at comfort, I guess that can kind of mean lots of things to different people. It could be keeping a person warm, allowing them to move less, perhaps if they're not very mobile, and just generally allowing them to interact with their home in a way that works better for them. So I think a really good example of this is voice control. So if a person is perhaps not very able-bodied in their older age, and they can move less to sort of complete tasks like switching on a light or switching on their heating, then voice obviously allows them the ability to do that much more easily. I think another kind of element of this is around just generally making day-to-day lives a little bit more convenient. So in terms of things like medication reminders, some people in older age struggle with memory. So having that ability for technology to remind a person that they have to take their medication and just generally sort of improve their day-to-day quality of life. One of my kind of favourite snippets of user feedback I've read on Wiser Heat, which is one of the products I'm responsible for at Schneider, is from a lady telling us that she feels she's been able to combat such a huge level of anxiety around her elderly mother because she knows that she can check in on her heating remotely. She knows she's comfortable. So I think that kind of twofold piece of the person in the home being comfortable, but the person that might be looking after them also being comfortable.
And that's a really important factor, I think, when it comes to considering smart technology for elderly care, is how do you involve their support network to work? Is that something you think manufacturers need to focus on if they're providing products for elderly care, is how they can encompass the family and friends?
Yeah, definitely. But I think there's a really thin line between it being supportive and then kind of people feeling like they're maybe being spied on or constantly under surveillance. And it's a hard thing to get right. I do think it's important. I think it gives reassurance on both sides that you've always got that interaction between the person and the carer, if there is a carer or a family member.
I guess it's that thing of being able to give the person the ability to select which bits of information goes out to their family and carers and what doesn't. Again, like you say, a very tricky fine line to walk to achieve that. One of the biggest things, that a piece of research that came out saying that the main two proponents that affected elderly people going into the NHS system was heating and fall. For both those elements, where could smart technology sort of be applied to make a difference and lower the amount of elderly people ending up in the NHS system?
Yeah, so I think on the heating side, obviously that's something that we're really passionate about. Our heating solution is super easy to use, so an elderly person could interact with it via an app if they had that capability. They could use their voice if they didn't. And obviously they can give access to other people that, you know, they might want to have access to the system. So I think you've always got that kind of feeling that the person who's in the home can control their heating and keep themselves warm, but if they maybe don't have that ability for whatever reason, somebody else can do it for them. I think on the full side, that's where things like motion sensing becomes really critical, because if you've got motion sensors or some forms of sensors set up in that person's home, you can be notified pretty quickly if perhaps there's a lack of movement, or if, you know, even the sensors can detect a fall. Somebody can kind of go around and check on that person pretty quickly rather than them maybe being there for a prolonged period.
That's a really interesting question, I think, here on the kind of the wider role that society, community, and actually, you know, I think since COVID, we've kind of introduced this concept of a, you know, a care circle or a care bubble, you know, whereby households are kind of looking out for each other a little bit more. Do you think that, and obviously in the government's targets are looking to keep people in their homes for an additional 5 years, do you think that smart home devices always have a role to play in assisting people, not just in the sort of the health and the health side of things, you know, in being reactive to things like falls and things, but also proactive in actually helping people with the sort of the day-to-day stuff, whereas previously they might have had to have sought out support earlier. Do you think that the technology has the potential essentially to allow them to be that bit more independent at the same time?
Yeah, 100%. I think that smart home technology can promote independence. I think there's so many different devices and things available now, it can get to the point where it could become a little bit overwhelming. But even things like smart coffee machines, smart washing machines, smart fridges, just those things that people would interact with on a daily basis that, you know, maybe might become a little bit harder. They can use all of those things to maintain their independence without feeling that need to call upon somebody else, or without that carer or family member feeling the need to call upon them, because the smart technology is there to sort of support them without the human element.
I think simply because, you know, a lot of the messaging that I suppose that we see from a lot of smart home companies or, you know, manufacturers, it's often talking about, you know, the long list of features, or the kind of maybe focused on them kind of being gadgets or, you know, cool little things for your home. Do you think that the industry has a bit of a responsibility to better effectively communicate the kind of the use cases, I suppose, for a much wider demographic in terms of how this technology can actually be used by a wide array of people to sort of enhance their home lives?
Yeah, 100%. I think we have a responsibility to communicate that benefit, help people understand the tangible benefit, and in a way make it desirable to them. I think often, you know, it's built on maybe a practicality basis for the elderly. Actually, it can still be really desirable. It can be fun. It can bring different elements to their lives, and I think we can do a lot more to get those benefits across. Yeah.
You know, quite often we hear, especially in the elderly or aging population, that that they don't like technology that essentially makes them feel old. I think that quite a lot of time, technology that's designed for the older demographic so often is sort of, it's beige, it's bulky, it's, you know, sort of, you kind of conjures up those images of, you know, big panic alarms worn around the neck. And I think that actually it can be a little bit, I suppose, almost dehumanizing to a certain extent. You know, it makes you feel, you know, like a burden, you know, quite a lot of people have sort of said in research. So do you think that the smart home industry has a responsibility to ensure that solutions and products themselves are not just sort of fit for purpose, but actually, like you said, designed to be, to enhance people's lives rather than feel quite often sometimes like a literal millstone around their neck?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it doesn't matter what age you are, you still want things to look nice in your home. You want them to be kind of easy to use and install. You know, we shouldn't forget that aside from all the benefits that technology brings, it's still going to sit in someone's home somewhere or maybe even on their person. So it also needs to look really good. I think kind of a key way that we can do this is through customer feedback and through testing. So I'm quite sort of old school product management in the sense of voice of the customer is sort of number one and it's key. And if we look at, we take Wiser as an example, our key demographic at the moment, 45 to 64. What that means is if we only test and research with those people, how do we know if we're serving the needs of the users outside of that demographic? How do we know if they like it, it suits their needs, they're kind of happy with it? So I think we have a responsibility to test our products and get customer feedback with a whole spectrum of customers to make sure it fits their needs. Even, for example, if you think about some of the reasons that the technology can be clunky for the elderly, things like vision and dexterity impairment means that a lot of the time the technology needs to be bigger for it to be seen. How do we make sure that we're taking feedback on board and we're adapting the tech for that, for those users?
That in-depth testing is so important when you think about the journey, because obviously what we hope will happen is that people will be able to interact with that technology earlier in a different way, and then they're able to use it at point of need, which means that they could be working with this technology in their home for, say, 10, 15 years, rather than it necessarily being installed after they've had, you know, an injury or have extra requirements. So do you think comprehensive and constant testing is really that pathway forward to sort of build out that journey for the consumer?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one arm of it. I think the other is that as manufacturers, we make the technology interoperable. If someone starts a journey with one product and then perhaps 10 years down the line it develops into another, it's not great for them in terms of a journey perspective if they have to switch out everything else that interacts with that one piece of technology. I think we need to make sure that we can allow for change within the journey and allow people to build on without having to switch things out and in essence make costly investments as they go along, because a lot of the technology isn't super cheap, so we need to make sure that it can interact with one another.
Definitely. And it's one of the big, so we've just recently conducted a survey, and one of the big pieces of feedback we got from a slightly older demographic was their concern and lack of trust in the technology brands being around for long enough for the investment that they're asking them to give for these products. So citing the recent Belkin issue where they decided to withdraw support on some of their sort of smart cameras because they were moving out of that market. How do manufacturers and companies that are installing these technology build trust with elderly consumers that these products, yes, are going to require a bit of investment, but are built to last?
One element of it is to continue to update products kind of remotely, so over the air upgrades and things like that, so that a customer feels like they've constantly got the latest product without having to reinvest. I think the kind of concept, again, obviously that I mentioned interoperability, that would mean then if one company did withdraw from the market for whatever reason, they left tech behind that could interact with, say, another app or another voice assistant or something like that. I think that's really important. And then I think one of the elements is around the cost. So if we make these products more, entry-level price point, and we make it a lot easier to afford for people, if that situation does arise, people reinvesting in something else to replace that piece of technology that maybe become obsolete is not so great. But if these products are super expensive, then people are just going to say, well, no, I've already invested once, I'm not going to do it again.
Jess, you made a really interesting point actually there around the aging, the aging population and care concerns. Is the sort of the importance, I suppose, for this technology to be proactive, in terms of the future direction of the market, do manufacturers need to look at things, such as artificial intelligence or machine learning to make sure that actually, for example, any sensors or smart speakers or any devices in the home sort of can learn patterns of behavior and understand when things might be wrong necessarily before the user has either flagged, calls for help. And I suppose the other question as well is that if this technology, for example, is being installed after a fall or after an event that requires, for example, maybe a little bit of an additional help or monitoring, do you think that almost that's going to be too late in order to provide them any sort of long-term benefit? And actually, it's more important that these devices are in sooner, so people actually get an understanding of how they can help in the event of, an emergency, I suppose.
On the AI side, that's super important, predicting what can go wrong. That kind of takes a huge element off of the person themselves, because it means that they can still go about their day-to-day life and the technology is doing the work for them. So even something as basic as if someone's forgotten to take some medication for a couple of days, they could get an alert initially, but then we use AI to predict, actually, hang on, if that person doesn't take their medication for a third day in a row, this could happen. Maybe somebody needs to be alerted, that kind of thing. It's really important. I think on the second part of the question, my opinion is it's never too late. I think that if somebody has had a difficult time, they've had a fall and maybe not had the best experience, I think we can use technology to say, if this happens again, having this technology installed can bring you these benefits. I think at that stage, it's really difficult to get people to maybe switch a mindset. So we definitely have more of a barrier to overcome in helping them understand how the technology can improve their lives. But I definitely don't think we should rule out, retrospectively putting technology in once people get past a certain point.
And then that kind of brings up an interesting element. Obviously, what's some of the important things is if we are putting in technology earlier, is the data that it captures could be very useful to health professionals, to local authority when it comes to providing care in the community, particularly for the elderly. However, what's the line and how do we ensure that we're being helpful without people feeling that they're being constantly monitored? Where do you believe the line sits in that situation in terms of the benefits of linking up with, say, the local GP, but also making sure that people feel that they're not being monitored constantly?
I think it probably lies with the person in a way. Certainly if it's medical, I think it needs to be down to that person to make a decision as to whether they share that data. When we use kind of other devices, so like heating or lighting, for example, and we take that data of how people switch their heating on in their homes, when they're in their homes, what their general schedules look like, and we use that data to make predictions and kind of enrich our product, I think that is maybe slightly different because it's not quite as personal as something like medical data. So I think first and foremost, the kind of consent needs to sit with the person.
And I guess the next stage of that is obviously making sure that they're well informed about what measures they need to take to ensure their security and privacy when utilising these devices. Do you think the onus is on the manufacturer to provide that information, or that it might be the job of local authority to help skill certain, not just the elderly generation, but all of the community on improving sort of their digital security skills?
I think it's both, actually. I think as manufacturers, we've got the responsibility to make sure the security is in place, that we're using all the correct protocols to make sure that people's data is secure and it's protected. We can only do so much with regard to messaging and reaching those people. So I think if we've got the opportunity to work with like local authorities, as an example, to get them really clued up on the technology we use and how we can make that into kind of more customer-friendly language and more face-to-face interaction, I think that could be really powerful. I think a lot of older people, you know, they would rather learn about something or understand something through speaking to someone that they trust. And I think often that comes from kind of people in their community. So I think actually it's both. And if we could somehow tie those things up, it could be a really powerful way to help people understand how to use technology in the best way for them.
I think that's a very good point. And I think it comes down so much again to that question of education. And, you know, it's not necessarily just a question of the user knowing what a product can do, but also, you know, how it works and what the impact is. And, for example, you know, on the privacy issue, on the trust issue, that they actually know, you know, beyond just sort of signing off, you know, terms and conditions without really, you know, reading it, you know, actually, would it be helpful for example, manufacturers to be providing consumers with almost like a one page cheat sheet, I suppose, with saying, look, you know, in order to make this work and in order to deliver you the best experience, this is what we do with your data. And it might be saying, look, it's completely anonymized. All we ever do is actually measure things like, you know, usage patterns and to improve things. But do you think that there's a kind of a responsibility from the part of the manufacturers to better communicate how data is and could be processed by them? And do you think that actually if people, you know, do understand and have it sort of upfront and spelled out for them, that, you know, they are prepared to be, I suppose, a bit more trusting?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of that's come in, obviously, with GDPR. I think that kind of brought a lot of that to the forefront. But I think, in a way, some of this comes back to the interoperability piece. I think what would be helpful to the consumer is if there were clearer standards and smart home manufacturers were all using data in sort of similar ways, so that actually people didn't have to read if they had five different products in their home from five different manufacturers. They didn't have to read five different cheat sheets. They could just read one and understand how the data is being used. Obviously, that's not always possible because, you know, certain products' data is different and it needs to be collected slightly differently. I think as best we could do to make that kind of universal standard would make a huge difference.
So would you say that there's actually the job of the government to maybe step in and apply that legislation to make it easier for groups of manufacturers or installation providers or even local authorities apply this technology to get the benefits that are already available today in a way that's going to make the target groups comfortable if that legislation existed?
So whether it comes from more of a tops-down, the kind of global technology company level, but certainly it needs to come from somewhere. And it needs to be a joint effort because, you know, just one or two companies, even if they're, you know, as big as Schneider Electric is, they can't do it on their own.
No, and I guess it comes back into this interoperability element. Unless everybody agrees and comes together and sort of goes, right, we've got this charter and this is how we're going to operate and we're going to uniform this across all these devices, again, it gets difficult because as you add more devices into a system, you've then got to double check, does it work? Is it going to cause problems? Is it got the same level of security? Does it make everything else at risk? It's very tricky to pin down who is responsible to orchestrate that. You talked earlier about heating, and obviously that's something that Schneider Electric is very, very passionate about, not only in the sense of how it can help with the elderly. I know that there's a number of factors in terms of making sure that they're amply heating their home, but also being more cost effective because the cost of energy has gone up so substantially. Could you talk a bit more about the work that you've been doing at Schneider Electric using smart technologies to help people with their bills and sort of reducing that energy cost?
Yeah, sure. So at Schneider Electric, we've got a commitment to be carbon neutral by 2025, which is pretty aggressive. It's kind of ahead, certainly, of a government as an example. And we are trying to make sure that that goes into each level of our solutions. So we kind of provide solutions for huge buildings right down to individual dwellings and single homes. So in the kind of single home element where I'm focused, with regard to smart thermostat, if a customer installs a smart thermostat, if they had basic controls or no controls at all, they will pretty much immediately start to see energy savings. But what is specific about Wiser Heat is that it allows individual rooms to be controlled. So if you take that in the context of the elderly, we know that quite a lot of people stay in their homes for many, many years, and that might be a home that they shared with three children 20 years ago, and now those rooms aren't being used, but with a traditional control, they would be being heated. So if we install individual radiator thermostats into each of those rooms, they can be turned off when there's nobody in there, which therefore means that person will save energy and in turn save money. And then the other kind of element of it is just to get people to interact with their heating and understand it a little bit better. So we have something called the Insights feature, which allows people to track the amount of energy they've been using across months and see kind of room by room how their heating's been looking.
I think it's a really interesting method of messaging, basically, presenting to the market, look, realistically, this is how it can help. And this is how it does help as well. So I think that leads us also quite nicely onto kind of the future of community and care in the community and an aging population in the community after COVID-19 or sort of, mid and after COVID-19. We understand, obviously, that COVID-19 has impacted the elderly community hard, and many residents or many of the population, a lot of the population, are feeling very vulnerable. So what role do you think that the smart home technology has to play, not only to help in the recovery in terms of, if people have been ill and they're now back in their homes, but also how can smart technology sort of enhance people's lives at home, especially, if they are shielding or bits like that? Do you think that this is actually proof that smart home technology can bring people together?
Yeah, I think for me, the number one benefit of smart home technology is human interaction. I think we know that, loneliness and that lack of social connection can cause a lot of health issues. And I think if you've got technology installed in the home and the only thing it does is give you an additional interaction point with family once a week, for example, then that is a huge win. Because I think, throughout COVID, regardless of our age, I'm sure all of us at some point have felt, like we're really desperate to see certain people, or we wish we could have a hug from our families or whatever. So I just think that the human interaction piece for me is definitely number one. But I think with regard to other kind of elements of the technology, there are other sort of more specific things. So one example with regard to shielding, I think, is that kind of concept that the less people that can enter the house, the better. So a lot of the things we've spoken about already in terms of you know, like sensors and AI predicting if perhaps something could go wrong to avoid anyone entering the house before it does. But then there's also other services. So if we think about remote diagnostics as an example, if someone's shielding and their boiler breaks, they might have to have a heating engineer come in to assess the problem, and then maybe someone different would have to come in to fix it on, say, another day. But something like remote diagnostics means that it could either be fixed remotely, so actually nobody enters the home, or the engineers know the issue before they enter, so they only risk that one contact point with the person. And again, kind of coming back to AI, predicting and preventing that issue before it even arises using the sort of the data that's available in the home. So I think there's a lot that we can do around trying to make sure that those people are shielding, have protection from, you know, additional people in the outside world, really.
So it's almost important for us to consider the services or the software that we can apply outside of the products that we've already installed to enable it to be more fit for purpose in the future to face things like this lockdown situation and help them. So do you think there's an element or a next step or a future view for not just manufacturers, but maybe installation companies and retail to think about the services that they can create around these smart products that will help?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that kind of service side is growing quite rapidly. I think what's really difficult is that at the moment, a lot of services that people can kind of get in their homes, so, you know, remote diagnostics being one, they can be quite expensive. So I think there's a sort of a curve at the moment of, you know, increasing the adoption to try and push the price down for people, and also making sure that the services are valuable, because nobody wants to pay for a product and then pay for a service that is not really giving them a whole host more. So I definitely think, yeah, the service element is important. I also then think from a kind of a non-paid service perspective, just basics like customer and tech support. So if a person's got all of this tech in their house, there is always an opportunity for it to go wrong. And we have to consider, especially with the demographic that we've spoken about today, how we support that person if it goes wrong. You know, my grandma, for instance, would not want to be on talking to an online chatbot, for example, yeah, if something in her house went wrong. She'd want to be on the phone to someone with them talking her through it. So I think we've got a responsibility as manufacturers to make sure that that support is in place once the technology is installed in the home as well.
And I guess this sort of brings us on to something we're very passionate about, is putting that consumer, who, regardless of who they are, at the forefront. So if you are going to service the elderly market, is creating not only the product, but all the, like you're saying, all the support services, all the information that they're going to require to install and feel happy with the products to get the most value out of it, all needs to be tailored, not only in terms of what the content contains, but how it's deployed. One of the comments we got on our recent survey was that they had smart products, but they didn't feel they were getting the best value out of them or using it to its full potential. And the information's probably out there, but they didn't feel like they could access it. So is there a sense that there's it's a good idea, not only if you're, say, you're setting up a new smart company or even looking at reinvigorating the one that you have, to think about not just the product but all the touch points that customer might have with your company after they've bought it?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's kind of thinking about the customer journey end to end and how that might be different for some people versus others. You know, I'm sure we have people that buy our products on Amazon and never ever speak to us. Set it up with ease, they never have any issues. But then equally, we have people who need a lot more support on it. So yeah, for sure, I think we need to have those touch points in place and make sure that they're kind of tailored to the right demographic. But also, you know, I mentioned earlier, our demographic is is not the elderly. So we need to tailor it to the kind of the extremes either side of those target markets as well.
The whole service element to a lot of these products, you know, represents a source of dependable, I suppose, more revenue for companies as well. So I suppose it actually makes sort of commercial sense for manufacturers to be, or even retailers to be providing that kind of that service side of things from a financial point of view, because whether or not that's installation or remote support or remote diagnostics as well. So do you think that it actually makes sense for manufacturers or retailers to be providing an easy to use tailored service, you know, especially for an elderly population, I suppose, that are more accustomed to either phone support, for example, or even in-person support. So do you think that there could be benefits not just for the end consumer, but also for the manufacturers and retailers to be providing a personal level of service to customers?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's probably two elements to my answer to that question. So the first one would be, yeah, absolutely, it's an opportunity for manufacturers, but it is super complex. Things like revenue recognition, when you're maybe asking someone to pay for a service versus a product, is really different, and not all companies are necessarily set up to work that way. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done around kind of making sure you have everything set up correctly and that it's for purpose, and you can make sure that you execute on that service really well. And then on the second part, the kind of customer support and human element, I think as a company, you get a lot from that yourself. So we have a customer support center for Wyzer, and we get so many amazing suggestions on product improvement from people that phone that helpline. We kind of track all the calls that come in. We have a huge kind of backlog of things that people have suggested to us, and we make sure then I, as a product manager, feed that into engineering to say, look, you know, we've had 100 calls this month, and 10% of those have been about this. It'd be really great if we could do that and add this at the same time. So I think, although they are maybe difficult to initially set up, they take manpower. As an organisation, you can get invaluable feedback from having that set up.
Yeah, and I think that's really to Schneider Electric, sort of, it's a great testimonial to you guys that you kind of have that open dialogue with the customer, and you kind of acknowledge and you're informed, I suppose, by your research and your use cases, and like you say, that you can develop then your product, you can evolve it to make sure that it's the best version of itself for the customer. And I think that's really fascinating to see how the technology is these days, I suppose, is evolving, so that it's not just necessarily the manufacturers that are delivering innovation, but now that the consumer market is actually becoming a little bit more clued up on how these things work and things like that, you guys are then sort of able to respond to that demand, I suppose, for features or usability or pieces like that. And I think it's a really interesting vision for the future, I suppose, where tech companies and consumers are kind of almost working hand in hand to develop and evolve this technology to make it the best, you know, for everybody. So I think one final question, which is something that I think that everybody within the smart home industry, you know, thinks about, and I think it's important to think about, is where we see the smart home going from here. You know, in the past 5 to 10 years, we've seen so many developments, and now with the introduction of 5G, you know, being rolled out, and the connectivity of devices almost as standard in our homes. Natalie, really sort of curious to know from you, kind of where you see the smart home in you know, between 10 and 20 years, and the sort of the symbiosis, I suppose, between you know, people and their homes, essentially.
Big question. So for me, I think it's all around that automation piece and having those AI platforms in place that, I guess, in a way become like a brain. and for the house, they learn about what the person's doing, what their habits are, how they move around the home, so that they can predict kind of what that person needs and what's going to happen. I think I see the future of the smart home as being something that is there, it's integrated into everybody's daily lives, but they don't even necessarily need to interact with it. In a way, a little bit kind of what we spoke about earlier, that whole feeling of once something has happened, do we then give the person the technology? I think it will kind of turn on its head, and it will be like you're more likely to be in a connected home than not be in one. So hopefully the technology won't be an afterthought. It will be there from the beginning.
Mm.
And I guess that it then becomes the way that we're using it becomes different. So it almost changes a little bit how manufacturers and retailers work, in the sense that they will be looking at certain life points throughout a customer's journey to just remind them about how they can use the products they've already got in a different way that adds benefits, or how they can add maybe one tiny little element to their current smart home system that takes it to that next level.
Yeah, definitely. Honestly, I think it will become kind of relied upon, as opposed to, it will be a necessity as opposed to a nice to have.
It is. And the technology is changing so fast. Like, if you think about even in the last 4 years of the smart home industry, how quickly things have sort of changed and adapted and improved. You know, I'm really excited to see how the next decade, how everything really changes. Having a connected home is going to be the expectation that most people will have that. And then it becomes about how you make it truly smart.
As they become more intelligent and more connected, it's just that element of security. And if the more things we have connected to the internet, the more risks of security issues there are. So, you know, we just need to make sure that that is being developed as quickly and as effectively as the smart home technology itself is.
Completely agree. And I think then there's the responsibility on all of us in the industry to bring the consumer along with us. I forget when it comes to smart home, I'm like, oh, you can do this, this and this and this, when I'm talking to sort of my family or friends. And so there's that thing of as everything advances very, very quickly, making sure we are bringing the consumer along so that we don't get to, again, get that disconnect between what the system can actually do. And what their understanding of what it can do is, which I think we're kind of in at the moment.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. It's been a fascinating discussion around what we can be doing more of and better to improve the current situation, but also in the future, the smart home in the future might look like and how it might help us all. Thank you again for being part of our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's another new thing I've done in lockdown.
And thank you very much to Natalie from Schneider Electric for joining us today. Remember, if you want to get involved with the conversation, you can find us on social media, Beacon Agency, or drop us an email, hello@beaconagency.co.uk. Thanks.